Pull up a chair. I want you to close your eyes for a second. If you're not flying right now, and picture the worst airplane you can imagine sending into combat. A trainer, an open cockpit biplane made of plywood and fabric, canvas stretched over wooden ribs, so slow that a modern car could pass it on the highway. No radio, no guns to speak of, no parachutes for most of the war, an engine that puts out about as much horsepower as a decent lawn tractor. Now picture flying that thing over enemy lines, at night, in the dead of a Russian winter, and picture doing it 8, 10, 18 times before sunrise. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Tail Dragger, and this is the hangar where we tell the stories the history books rush past. And today I want to tell you about the bravest aviators most Americans have never heard of. The Germans called them the Nachthexen, the Night Witches, and they were young women, most of them barely out of their teens, flying the sorriest excuse for a warplane you ever saw. Before we get into it, today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. And I'll tell you, after you hear this story, you might think these young women earned about 100 coins apiece. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now here's where it gets interesting. It's the fall of 1941. Germany has invaded the Soviet Union, and the whole thing is coming apart at the seams. The Germans are driving east faster than anyone thought possible, and in Moscow there's a woman named Marina Raskova. Now, you have to understand who Raskova was. She was a national hero. She was the Soviet Amelia Earhart, famous all across the country for long-distance record flights, a pilot and a navigator with a name every school kid knew. And young women all over the Soviet Union were writing letters, begging to fly and fight. They had their licenses. Many of them had come up through the flying clubs, the aero clubs, where the state had taught tens of thousands of ordinary kids to fly gliders and light airplanes in the 1930s. These women could fly. They just weren't allowed anywhere near the front. Raskova took those letters straight to Stalin, and she got permission to form three regiments of women. Pilots, navigators, mechanics, armorers, all women top to bottom. Nobody had ever done such a thing. The one we're talking about today started life as the outfit that would become the 588th Night Bomber Regiment. And the airplane they were handed was the Polikarpov Po-2. Let me tell you about the Po-2, because the airplane is half this story. It was a biplane, a two-seat trainer designed back in the 1920s. The thing you learned to fly in, wood frame, fabric skin, two open cockpits, one behind the other, a little air-cooled radial up front, turning a wooden prop, top speed maybe 100 miles an hour if you were pointed downhill with a tailwind and you prayed. Cruise was more like 60, 65. A Piper Cub would look like a hot rod next to it. Now, on paper, that is a death trap over a battlefield, and it should have been. But here's the thing about that little biplane. It was so slow that it flew below the stall speed of the German fighters chasing it. Think about that. A Messerschmitt 109 came screaming in to make a firing pass, and the Po-2 was flying so slowly that the fighter would blow right past it and have to come around again. The women learned to throttle back and practically hover, jinking down into the trees, and the fast movers just could not stay behind them. And that little wooden fabric airframe? Radar of the day had a hard time seeing it. The engine was small and quiet, and that gave these women their signature weapon, the one that earned them the name. Here's how they did it. They'd fly in groups of three toward a German position. Two of the airplanes would go in first as bait, get the searchlights and the anti-aircraft guns all lit up and firing. And then the third airplane, while everybody was looking at her friends, would cut her engine. Cut it. Dead stick. Gliding in silent over the German lines in the black of night, and the only thing the German soldiers on the ground would hear was a soft whooshing sound. The wind sighing through the wires and struts of that little biplane as it ghosted overhead. Whoosh! And then the bombs came off the racks. That sound, that whispering swish in the dark, is exactly why they called them the Night Witches. It sounded, the German said, like the swish of a witch's broomstick. Then she'd restart the engine, and the three of them would swap jobs and do it again, and again and again, because that's the part that stops me cold every time. The Po-2 could only carry a tiny bomb load, a few hundred pounds slung under the lower wings, a couple of bombs at a time, sometimes just crude things they rolled off by hand, so one trip over the target did almost nothing. To do real damage, you had to go back and back and back, so these women flew all night, every night the weather allowed, land and the ground crews. Also, women would run out in the dark and reload the bombs by hand in a couple of minutes, freezing, fingers cracked and bleeding from the cold metal. Refuel, and launch again. 8 sorties a night was a normal shift. on the worst nights over the fighting at places like the Crimea and later pushing into Poland and Germany, some of them flew 15, 16, 18 trips before the sun came up. Do the math on a career. Some of these women flew close to 1,000 combat sorties, not 1,000 hours, 1,000 times over the target, over the guns, in an airplane made of sticks and canvas. Now let me put you in that cockpit because I want you to feel it.
You're sitting in an open cockpit. There's no canopy, no heater, nothing between you and the sky. It is 30 below zero, and the wind is a 100-mile-an-hour river of ice pouring over the windscreen and straight into your face. The women told stories later of the cold burning their skin, of frostbite, of reaching down to touch the airplane and leaving skin behind on the frozen metal. You've got no radio, so you and your navigator behind you talk through a speaking tube, or you just holler. You're navigating by the ground, by rivers and roads you memorized on a map, by dead reckoning with a stopwatch and a compass in the dark. For most of the war, no parachute. The command decided the extra weight cost them bombs, so they went without. If you caught fire and fabric airplanes catch fire beautifully, you wrote it down, and when you came over the target, the searchlights would swing up looking for you. Great cones of blue-white light sweeping the sky. If they caught you, if they coned you, you were a moth pinned to a board, and every gun on the ground opened up. Your airplane was made of wood and canvas soaked in flammable dope. One tracer round in the right place and you were a torch. That's why they cut the engines. That's why they came in silent. That whisper in the dark wasn't a stunt. It was survival. It was the difference between getting home and burning up over a German trench. And here's what really gets me, as an old pilot. These women were tremendous stick and rudder flyers. They had to be flying a slow, underpowered biplane on the ragged edge at night, heavily loaded in weather, with no instruments to speak of and no way to call for help. That is pure airmanship. That is feeling the airplane through the seat of your pants and the soles of your feet. No autopilot, no glass, no moving map, just hands and feet and nerve and a wooden propeller. Let me tell you about one of them, Nadezhda Popova. She flew this outfit from the early days. On one single night, they say, she flew 18 sorties. Her airplane came home riddled with holes so many times she quit counting. One night she landed and found 42 holes in her airplane. 42. In the wings, in the fuselage, in her helmet, in her map, and she went back up. She flew by the end something like 852 combat missions, and she lived to be an old woman and tell about it. A lot of her friends did not. The 588th flew from 1942 all the way to the end of the war. They fought over the Caucasus, over the Kuban, over Novorossiysk, over Sevastopol, and finally westward into Poland and right up to Berlin. 23 of these women were named Heroes of the Soviet Union, which was the highest honor the country could give. It was the most decorated female unit in the whole Soviet Air Force. 30-some of them died doing it, and they did it all in an airplane that a flight school today would ground for being obsolete before your grandfather was born. Now, I've spent my whole life around warbirds. I get misty over a Mustang. I'll stand in the sun all day at an air show to hear a Merlin run up, but I want you to sit with this one. We celebrate the fast movers, the sleek fighters, the big bombers, the airplanes that looked the part. And they earned every bit of it. But heroism in the air was never about horsepower. Some of the bravest flying of the entire war was done low and slow, in the dark and the cold, in a plywood trainer with the engine switched off by a 19-year-old girl gliding silent over the guns because it was the only way she and her friends were going to live to fly again tomorrow night. That's airmanship. That's guts, that's the whole thing, right there. In an airplane you could build in a barn. For today's story, I'm indebted to the accounts these women left behind, to Raina Pennington's fine history of Soviet women in combat aviation, and to the obituaries and interviews that captured Nadezhda Popova's own words before she passed. The history is theirs. I'm just the fellow lucky enough to tell it. You can find us anytime at radiohangar.com. So the next time somebody tells you a cub is too slow to be a real airplane, or that an old fabric biplane is just a toy, you tell them about the night the witches came. Engines off, nothing but a whisper in the dark. I'm Taildragger. Keep the shiny side up, and I'll see you back here in the hangar.